Flashback Fridays on Macroaggressions, taking you back to August 26th, 2020, episode number 51, Government Waste, Evil Corporations, and NGOs. Thanks to our sponsor, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. If you are interested in converting some of your soon-to-be worthless fiat currency into tangible precious metals, go to the website www.macroaggressions.gold. Now on with the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
In uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
for a
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, Macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. Thanks for checking us out. 850,000 different podcasts out there. The fact that you found this one is a miracle. I appreciate it. Thanks for checking us out. You can communicate with me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. I put all my social media links in the description box, so you can check me out there as well if you want to get a hold of the show, if you have questions, anything like that. One of the things that has always frustrated me, and I think a lot of people too, is the way that governments operate, and they take tax money from us, and then they use that tax money to fund programs that they deem to be reasonable and important. And we don't get a say in that. We don't get to tell them how to spend the money. I mean, there's limitations to it. I mean, we can sort of make our voices heard, but it doesn't do much good. And so much of the money that we hand over to this government, to our government in the United States and to governments around the world, just gets squandered on the dumbest shit possible. I mean, to the extent that you feel like they're trying to invent new ways to waste your money. And so people want to get away from that. They want to get away from the public function of government. And they swing the pendulum to the other extreme and want to privatize everything. And what you find are that those corporations are no better. They have zero responsibility or accountability to the people, maybe their shareholders. But even then, it's all about making the stock price go up. They don't really care too much about how it goes up. And then so you've got full public option, not very effective. You've got the full private option, definitely leads to corruption. And so then there's that, you think, well, maybe we'll meet in the middle, semi-public, semi-private, right? Charities, non-governmental organizations, NGOs, and things like that. They'll be careful reasonable stewards with our money. They'll spend it properly. No, nope. No, they will not. There's a whole lot of nonsense going on in that industry as well. So what we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about NGOs, and we're going to talk about foundations and some of the large private companies that are running our world and what they're doing in our name, with a lot of money that they convince the government to give them in the form of tax breaks or grants and things like that. And we'll just get into some of the shadiness of how the governments in conjunction with businesses work. Now, the definition of fascism is the state and corporations working together for the benefit of the state. Corporatism is when the state and corporations work together for the benefit of corporations. And I think that's what we have in the United States, more so than fascism. I know it's tempting to say, you know, we're after fascists. Fascists, go home. We've got Antifa, you know, that cast of characters, that batch of kids that never got picked to, you know, for the basketball team. Bunch of Dungeons and Dragons playing hermaphrodites or whatever out there with pink hair and black masks trying to rid the world of fascists. They don't even know what fascism is, let alone they're gonna end it. Okay, do some pull-ups first. Do mix in some push-ups. Give me a break. But there is a real anger, a legitimate organic anger towards fascism. And towards this blending of corporate technology or, you know, corporations and government. Because government in and of itself, just by itself, if left alone, it's staffed with usually the weakest links in the chain. A bunch of people that are just trying to cash a paycheck and get to their 30-year, service time so that they get a gold watch and get a pension or something like that. That is not setting you up to attract the best and brightest. It's not to say that everybody that works in government is awful, but have you been to the Department of Motor Vehicles? I mean, come on. Nobody's taking the Mensa test there, all right? Let's just put it that way. And there's a whole lot of attitude going on there. But people don't like government agencies. They don't like dealing with the government because one thing that we know is that the government is really wasteful and inefficient, and everything they seem to get involved with takes twice as long and costs five times as much. I made a list for my book. I wrote a book called The Octopus of Global Control. The website that you can check out for this show and for that book is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. And in one of the chapters, I made a list of 30 of the items that the government has wasted money on. Now, this is a real list. It's going to sound like a fake list. I mean, you're going to just go, there's no way they spent money on this sort of stuff. It is so crazy. It took me forever to find all this as well, but I think it's worth it. I think you'll like it because, if you had a hint that maybe your government was taking your tax dollars and flushing them down the toilet, your hint would be accurate once you hear this list. And I will say one thing. Better that they're spending our money on this useless crap than spending it on bombs to drop on people. God knows they do enough of that already. So at the very least, we can be grateful that this list could be a lot worse than it is. But it will be staggering, and you will want to, if you're listening to this in your car, you will want to drive your car into a telephone pole, more than likely. So let's just get started with this, shall we? The United States government spent $750,000 on a new soccer field for detainees in Guantanamo Bay. The downside to this is that they get waterboarded at halftime instead of getting oranges and wedges. And that kind of sucks. But I wonder if they play shirts versus skinned. I don't know. Number two, a total of $10,000 of U.S. taxpayer money was actually used to purchase talking urinal cakes in Michigan. Remember, Don't eat the big blue mint. Number three, the U.S. government spent $175,587 to determine if cocaine makes Japanese quail engage in sexually risky behavior. Look, cocaine makes everybody engage in sexually risky behavior. Haven't you guys been to Las Vegas? Number four, the United States government spent $200,000 on a tattoo removal program in Mission Hills, California. Yeah, I'm sure the boys at MS-13 are going to get right on that program. Number five, the federal government has shelled out $3 million to researchers at the University of California, Irvine, to fund their research on video games such as World of Warcraft. I get the feeling that someone is going to cast a level 12 invisibility spell on any women within a 3-mile radius of that place. Just a hunch. Number six, the Department of Health and Human Services plans to spend $500 million on a program that will, among other things, seek to solve the problem of 5-year-old children that can't sit still in a kindergarten classroom. $500 million. They're called kids. They can't sit still for anybody. Even Santa. Really? This is what we're spending money on? This sounds like money laundering to me. Number seven, Fannie Mae is about to ask the federal government for another $4.6 billion in bailout money, and it will almost certainly get it. By the way, Fannie Mae, worst stripper name of all time. Number eight, the federal government once spent $30 million on a program that was designed to help Pakistani farmers produce more mangoes. This seems reasonable to me. Everybody loves mangoes from Pakistan. We know that. Number nine, the U.S. Department of Agriculture once gave researchers at the University of New Hampshire $700,000 to study methane gas emission from dairy cows. Who the fuck spends $700,000 on cow farts when everybody knows you get cow farts for free? What a waste. Number 10, according to USA Today, not a very credible source, by the way, 13 different government agencies fund 209 different science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM as the acronym, education programs. And 173 of those programs overlap with at least one other program. Isn't that convenient? Well, luckily, Common Core is on its way to fix everything in 114 infuriating steps. Number 11, a total of $615,000 was given to the University of California, Santa Cruz to digitize photos, t-shirts, and concert tickets belonging to the Grateful Dead. Well, actually, I got to say, finally, they're spending it on something reasonable. And UC Santa Cruz, but you know what their mascot is, by the way? The banana slug. The only animal in the world that isn't somebody else's food. Number 12, China lends us, meaning the United States, more money than any foreign nation. But that didn't stop our government from spending $17.8 million on social and environmental programs for China. And on a side note, did you know that China spent $5 million in the lead up to the Beijing Olympics to educate Chinese people that it is not okay to blow snot rockets out of your nose onto the sidewalk? I'm not even kidding. That's a serious, serious thing. And by the way, I was standing on a street corner in Shanghai back in 2005, and I watched a dude do that, walked right up as we were waiting to cross a crosswalk, and he just put one finger on one nostril to hold it down and blew a huge snot rocket, and I almost threw up. And maybe that's just the thing in China, but they spent $5 million to teach everyone, hey, when all of the tourists come to Beijing, please don't do that because you look like a savage. All right. Number 13, back to China. The U.S. government once spent $2.6 million on training Chinese prostitutes to drink responsibly. Listen, The problem is really the Japanese businessmen, not the Chinese prostitutes. Those guys that get bombed out of their mind and then pass out on the trains. Leave the Chinese hookers alone. They're not bothering anyone. Number 14, one professor at Stanford University was given $239,100 to study how Americans use the internet to find love. I could have saved them a whole lot of money. I got one word for you. Porn. Number 15, United States Postal Service spent $13,500 on a single dinner at Ruth Chris Steakhouse. Frankly, I find that money well spent. Anything to keep these people from shooting up everybody, I'm fine with. Number 16, the National Science Foundation once spent $216,000 to study whether or not politicians, quote, gain or lose support by taking ambiguous positions. I'm just assuming that that is a euphemism for getting a blowjob. Number 17, a total of $1.8 million was spent on a museum of neon signs in Las Vegas, Nevada. How about spending money to see why so many people get hit by drunk drivers at 8 a.m. in the morning in Las Vegas? I will tell you the answer to that as somebody that lived there for 9 years. It's because they serve alcohol 24/7. Number 18, the federal government spends $25 billion with a B each year maintaining federal buildings that are either unused or a totally worthless facility. That's not a very nice thing to say about the people that work at the IRS. Number 19, U.S. farmers are given a total of $2 billion each year for not farming their land. Jesus, I wonder how much they'd be willing to pay us to not go to work. Seems like a pretty good deal. Number 20, the United States government handed one Tennessee library $5,000 for the purpose of hosting a series of video game parties. Look, we all know that's bullshit. There's no libraries in Tennessee. Number 21, a few years ago, the government spent $123,050 on a Mother's Day shrine in Grafton, West Virginia. It turns out that Grafton only has a population of a little more than 5,000 people. And that works out to about $1,000 per tooth, if my math is correct. Number 22, one professor at Dartmouth University was given $137,530 to create a recession-themed video game entitled Layoff. Oh, you wacky Ivy League assholes making games about other people's suffering. That's hilarious. Fuck off, Dartmouth. Number 23, according to the Heritage Foundation, the U.S. military spent $998,798 shipping to 19-cent washers from South Carolina to Texas, and they spent $293,451 sending an 89-cent washer from South Carolina to Florida. This is how they secretly pay for things like hiring a hitman to kill the guy writing stories about how the government spends $293,451 on sending washers across the country. This is money laundering. This is the $500 toilet seat or the $3,000 hammer. This is how they do it. Number 24, the Department of Agriculture spent $2 million to fund an internship program. The program hired one full intern. Jesus Christ, who did they hire? Orville Redenbacher? That's crazy. 25, the National Institute of Health paid researchers $400,000 to find out why gay men in Argentina engage in risky sexual behavior when they're drunk. I could have saved them some money. Why don't they just ask all those guys at the Heritage Foundation? They know all about that. I'm not trying to out anyone. I'm just saying there's a lot of them over at the Heritage Foundation in the closet. Number 26, over the past 15 years, a total of approximately $5.25 million has been spent on hair care services for the U.S. Senate. Could you even imagine how much higher that number would have been if Rod Blagojevich had been senator instead of a governor? Holy shit. Number 27, the National Institutes of Health once spent $500,000 in stimulus funds to study the impact of a genital washing program on men in South Africa. Seriously? Stimulus funds? Number 28. According to the Washington Post, the least trusted newspaper in the history of newspapers, 1,271 different government organizations work on government programs related to counterterrorism and homeland security. Well, I guess the Washington Post might be the right newspaper to write the story about that, seeing how most terrorists are already in Washington, D.C. Number 29, last year, $120 million was paid to dead federal employees. Also, last year, a total of $146 million was paid for federal employees to upgrade their flights to business class. I'm presuming that we're talking about the living employees still. Number 30, the feds, in the last one, the feds once gave Alaska Airlines $500,000 to paint a Chinook salmon on the side of a Boeing 737. So the next time the United States government complains about not having enough money to fund essential services like schools and things like that, just remind them that if they simply cut back on the amount of money spent on maintaining empty federal buildings and their obsession with why gay men do certain things, there would be plenty of money left over to do the sorts of things that we need to get done. And this is part of the reason why people can't stand the American government, because they just seem to find new and inventive ways to take your money and light it on fire in front of you. But they want more of it. They got to get more of it so that they can spend it in poor ways. And so people start to see this and they go, you know what? Let's do away with governments. Let's privatize everything, right? Because if we privatize it, then, you know, at least we'll put it in the hands of somebody that has some sort of financial incentive to go out there and do a good job, right? If you do a good job, then you're rewarded and people will pay for your service. And if you want to make some money doing that, that's fine. The interest is in doing the best job possible. So we privatize things and hand it over to the corporations. Yeah, that's a problem too, because now they see things in a different way, not a better way, just a different way. And they'll take your money and waste it as well. They find new and creative ways to screw over the people by, you know, what we saw on Wall Street, which was socializing losses and privatizing gains. So if they, you know, heads they win, tails we lose, that sort of thing. And that has become sort of just the way Wall Street works, the way big business works in general. They tilt the playing field that way. You saw it with the pharmaceutical industry and their push to have the vaccine court created, because in 1986, they bought a bunch of politicians and got the had put laws in place so that people, so that the public couldn't sue the pharmaceutical industry for vaccine damages. And that, of course, made it easy for them to do business, because now there's no downside as far as litigation goes. So full governmental, no good. Full private, also no good. Maybe there's a sweet spot in between. Maybe, maybe not. But the private corporations, you know, if you remember Mitt Romney saying, corporations are people, my friend, of course they are. No, actually they aren't, you big dummy. Honestly, that statement just proved how completely detached from reality that guy was. And that's probably the reason why he didn't become president, because only a robot like Mitt Romney would think that a corporation is a person. But if a corporation really was a person, Mitt Romney would have fired it during one of his corporate takeovers and liquidations while at Bain, and that was right after he would have saddled it with 8 times more debt than it had before Bain took over. So he has no love for people as well. I know corporations give him a boner, and that's a very weird thing, but that's also Mitt Romney. Have you looked at him? He looks like a corpse, or like a fake person, some like synthetic automatron that was made in some weird laboratory somewhere. But Mitt Romney is correct in saying that corporations do play an important role in our society. They are, and it's not to say that all corporations are evil. Like Google. Google's not evil. Their motto is don't be evil, right? So therefore they're not. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic. But the well, Ronald Bernard, who is a former high-level banker, once said a pretty good quote. He said, "All misery on earth is a business model." And unfortunately for him, he's right, because there is money to be made in misery, war and things associated with that. Obviously, we spend $1 trillion a year in the United States on the defense industry. There's lots of money in misery. And the Swiss Federation, or rather the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, did this study analyzing the overall reach and power of what they call multinational corporations. I think we all know what that is. Corporations that don't reside in just one country, but are multinational, obviously. From a pool of about 37 million, give or take 37 million companies, this institute narrowed down the group to 43,060 transnational corporations and examined the shared ownerships linking them. And what they found was that of the 43,060, these corporations could be broken down even further down into 147 global companies with interlocking ownership stakes in each other's boards. And this group of just 147 corporations controlled 40% of the wealth in this network of 43,060 companies. That is astounding. And so what I did was I looked up, I looked up who these top 50 companies, you know, I looked up who the 147 companies were and put together a top 50 list. And what's interesting, one of the things you find is that the names on this list are mostly names you've never even heard of before. And I think they like that. I think there's something to, there's a benefit to them of flying under the radar. So I'll read a couple of the names that you will recognize from this list of 147 super, we just call them super connected companies. Number one on the list, Barclays Bank. You've got number two, Capital Group. Number three, FMR Corporation. What is that? You know, that's just a name that doesn't really jump out at you. Here's one that does, JP Morgan Chase. I think everyone understands that. UBS, Merrill Lynch is on the list. Deutsche Bank is on the list. I don't know for how long. Credit Suisse Group, Walton Enterprises. No surprise there. Bank New York Mellon, Goldman Sachs, the Vampire Squid, as Matt Taibbi quite accurately referred to them. T. Rowe Price, Morgan Stanley, Mitsubishi, Societe Generale, Bank of America, Lloyd's Group, Lloyd's of London Group, Lehman Brothers was on this list. They're gone now. Mass Mutual Life Insurance, ING, BNP Paribas, and Capital Group International, and finishing up in 50th place, China Petrochemical Group. So, look, to be fair, there's nothing nefarious about simply owning or working for a corporation. I want to be clear about that. But it's when the corporation is used to conduct illegal or immoral business that opinions change. These legal structures that are created for corporations can be used to insulate the people from responsibility or disclosure or for, you know, or they can just be used for tax shields and estate planning and things like that. So it's not to say that just because you are involved in, running or starting corporations that that you're up to no good. I mean, hell, a corporation could be started for a couple hundred bucks. It's relatively easy to do. I've done it several times. It's just a legal form of protection for setting up a business. And in fact, it makes a lot of sense to do that. But like I said, the problem comes, it's not the thing, it's the intent of the thing. And that's where you find yourself in situations where the corporations can, they're not restrained by a normal human lines in the sand. There's some anonymity to being a corporation, because it's not a real thing. It's not a living thing. I mean, unless you're Mitt Romney, but for everybody else, it's just this entity that doesn't really exist. And therefore, if it breaks a law, or if it decides it wants to, draw up the plans for genetically modified organisms, then people can get mad, but they're getting mad at an inanimate object. So it's sort of, the criticism sort of stops there. Yeah, you can get mad at the CEO of Monsanto and everything like that. But if you're out there saying, I hate Monsanto, stop Monsanto, I get it. You don't want this company to exist anymore, but you're really protesting against an inanimate object. And that, of course, is a colossal waste of time. So using Monsanto as an example, if you were to take a poll to determine the most hated company in the world, Monsanto would have to be the winner of that. Maybe Goldman Sachs. I don't know. It'd be close. So Monsanto is a publicly traded American multinational agrochemical and agriculture biotechnology company. It was recently bought by Bayer, a German company who has their own problems. They have their ties into their foundings in IG Farben in Germany, company used to make Zyklon B that was used in, depending on your stance on World War II, it was either used to exterminate the Jews or it was used in the delousing process of clothing, or maybe both. So definitely a dangerous chemical, and Bayer has their history and their roots in this. And they purchased Monsanto a couple of years ago, which frankly is a match made in hell, because you put those two companies together, they have quite a lot in common. But just focusing on Monsanto as an example for the purposes of discussing how corporations can be viewed and how their actions can determine how they're received by the general public. Monsanto is the leading producer of genetically engineered seeds and also a product called Roundup. Brand name Roundup. It is, which is a glyphosate-based herbicide. Now, Monsanto's role in agriculture changes, biotechnology products, lobbying of government agencies, along with its history as a chemical company, have made the company extremely controversial. And for damn good reason. Monsanto claims to be in the agriculture business, but really what they are, I think a more accurate representation of what Monsanto is they're in the poison business. Over the past, over the past 10 years, they have really cemented their place as the most hated company on earth, certainly in the United States. Their sales tactics are dirty. Their lies about product safety are unbelievable. Their gross hypocrisy, and of course, their genetically modified GMO food agenda is just directly tied to every person on this planet. It is unbelievably dangerous. So, who's Monsanto? Why are we mad at them? They're just a corporation, right? We're talking about, in this episode, we're talking about government, government's roles, non-governmental organizations' roles, and private corporations' roles in screwing up the world. Well, here's Monsanto's deadly legacy in a nutshell. I'm not going to go through this in any sort of, I'm not ranking this in terms of least harmful to most harmful. It's all harmful. Let's start with saccharin. Remember saccharin? We don't really hear too much about it. But in the 1970s, a study revealed that saccharin actually caused cancer in test rats and mice, which I'm assuming probably resulted in high fives by all the Monsanto scientists and executives. I'm just speculating, maybe being a little bit sarcastic. But this item was listed as a carcinogen. But after lots of pressure from Monsanto and probably a bunch of cash, this study that showed saccharin as causing cancer was disregarded, and saccharin was removed from this list as a carcinogen. So now you can enjoy your tumors caused from saccharin to this day in a variety of foods. So if you're eating something that is filled with saccharin, which is a sugar substitute, just know that it causes tumors. It causes cancer in rats. And yeah, I'm not a rat, and you're not a rat, but it probably causes something bad for you too. Next is PCBs. They've been linked to causing cancer as well as contributing to a number of adverse health effects and, you know, all kinds of things. So they screw up. Oh man, how do I say it? So they affect the reproductive system. They target the reproductive system, the nervous system, and the endocrine system. So this is PCBs, not to be confused with PCP, okay? That's what you take before you decide to bite somebody's face off or kick the windows out of a cop car. That is not the same thing, all right? That's angel dust. So we're talking about PCBs. This is the chemical that's used in plastics and things like that. And we've got, you know, we kind of joke about it a little bit, how you got a lot of soy boys out there, you know, a bunch of guys that are a little bit more effeminate. Well, the PCB is an endocrine disruptor. It's made into all the plastics and a lot of the packaging and materials that we use on a daily basis. And of course, I don't know if everybody knows this, but you know, you've got plastic water bottles. If you leave them out in the sun, the water leaches some of the PCBs into the water. It's very bad to leave those plastic bottles out into the sun. And so when those chemicals get into the water and then you drink the water, it can contribute to that as endocrine disruptors and other problems with, you know, the nervous system and the reproductive system, you know, just the most important systems in your body, this thing screws with. Then they've got Monsanto put out a product called polystyrene. It's non-biodegradable, so it never goes away, which is awesome, making it kind of like the herpes of hazardous waste, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. Chronic exposure to it has been tied to depression, headaches, and fatigue. So this is not a great substance to have around. I think everybody has heard of DDT. We not use it now anymore, but because it was banned in 1972, but it was connected to damaging the liver, reproductive systems, and causing temporary damage to the nervous system. I'm sure those Monsanto scientists were bummed that it only caused temporary damage to the nervous system. They were pulling for full and permanent damage to the nervous system, I'm sure. They also made dioxin. And one of the most dangerous aspects to dioxin is that it accumulates in the food chain. Oh, and yeah, and it causes cancer too. in case you were worried that maybe they would created a product that didn't cause cancer. Don't worry, it causes cancer as well. That's a theme. Monsanto, building cancer, one drug at a time. Agent Orange. Okay. Agent Orange was made with dioxin. And the United States used this in the Vietnam War. They sprayed it all over the trees. It's a defoliant. It makes the leaves fall off of the trees. If it makes the leaves fall off of the trees, what do you think it does to you? What do you think it does to the people that are there? I'm kind of laughing because it's crazy. I'm obviously not laughing at the seriousness of this because it gives children horrible birth defects and it gives adults terrible health problems. Oh, and by the way, don't forget the 400,000 people that it killed as well. Agent Orange was a reprehensible product that was sprayed everywhere. You know, I'm sure you've heard the stories of Vietnam vets coming back and being sick. Like, their health is a mess. Not to mention their heads being scrambled from the things that they had to do and the things that they saw. But the chemicals that were sprayed, if you've seen those, you know, deformed children that came out of Cambodia, Laos, and Vietnam after the war, you know, the ones that were born right after that were people that were living in areas that were heavily sprayed with Agent Orange. I mean, the kids came out with like no exaggeration, like extra arms and things like that. It's horrible. It is a horrible thing. Monsanto made it. I'm sure everybody is surprised. Petroleum-based fertilizers. So, because there aren't enough things already that are made out of oil, they had to come up with a new thing, which is fertilizer made out of oil. You know, so that's because that's what plants are really missing, right? They need water, sunlight, and what's that other thing they need? Oh, yeah, they need lots of petroleum-based products all over them. So, when you use petroleum-based fertilizers, and look, by no means am I a farmer or a gardener for that, but it does eventually sterilize the soil, making it fully dependent on external stimulant to produce. So once you spray too much petroleum-based fertilizers over an area, then you it screws up the soil to the point where you always have to use it. It's very devious, but it's also, if you think of it like a business model where they cause you to be constantly dependent on a product, then that would be it. I already mentioned Roundup, but Roundup is a product that will go down in history as the most destructive of all Monsanto's stable of horrible ideas. The main ingredient in Roundup is glyphosate. It is a chemical that has been linked to not just cancer, which is obviously bad enough, but as a endocrine disruptor as well. These disruptors can cause developmental disorders, birth defects, and cancerous tumors. Once again, here we go with the cancer. Monsanto also developed aspartame. Technically, a company named Cyril and Company developed aspartame, but Monsanto bought them, so they kind of get credit for it. And aspartame, like saccharin, is another artificial sweetener used as a sugar substitute in food and drinks. Monsanto managed to get themselves involved in 1985 when they bought the company. Now, the history of G.D. Cyril, who was the maker of aspartame, is kind of interesting. They tried like hell to get that thing approved by the FDA for years and years. It kept getting kicked back. The people that were at the FDA were like, this is no good for you. This causes all kinds of problems. This is we're not approving it. And then they'd send it back, and then they'd try to approve it again, and they'd kick it back, and they'd kick it back over and over again, until finally G.D. Cyril went out and got themselves somebody that they thought might be able to help them. They hired this person. This person went to the FDA, had a conversation with them, and then the next thing you know, aspartame is approved. And this person put $16 million in their pocket. I want to take a wild guess who this person is. Who is a person that would have government ties, no soul, be highly motivated by money, and think nothing of poisoning the rest of humanity? Somebody in Washington, D.C. If you guessed Donald Rumsfeld, you would be correct. He's the son of a bitch that got aspartame passed. Next on the list of Monsanto's greatest hits, bovine growth hormone, otherwise known as RBGH, lowercase r, capital B, capital G, capital H. So by artificially increasing milk production, RBGH also raises the levels of pus and antibiotic residues and cancer accelerating hormones called IGF-1, when consumed by humans, it continues to act as a cancer accelerator, and it has been linked to breast, colon, and prostate cancer. At least Monsanto is consistent. And lastly, and certainly best known, is Monsanto's work with GMOs, genetically modified organisms. In the early 90s, they began their initiatives to, and still continue to this day, to help feed the world. That's what they said they were doing. But it should be, you know, it should come as no surprise to anyone paying attention that one of the largest shareholders in this Monsanto company, this evil, evil company, that is, by all accounts, in the poison business, in the cancer business, is none other than one of my favorite, and by favorite, I mean least favorite, human beings on the planet, Bill Gates. Right on schedule. Bill Gates owns a ton of Monsanto stock because he's a eugenicist and a gigantic human piece of shit who is actively trying to kill off as many people as he can. And this is the type of company you'd get involved with if you like that. I mean, you know, he likes to masquerade as some lovable nerd and philanthropist, but his actions, man, they show a much more sinister mission for not just him, but also the Gates Foundation. His involvement with the Monsanto and the Rockefeller Foundation and Syngenta, which is another biofood company like Monsanto, and don't forget his creation. Bill Gates was the paid for that Svalbard global seed vault that's buried in Norway, in the permafrost of Norway. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but it looks like this weird sci-fi building that's kind of coming out of the rocks, and inside that they built this gigantic doomsday vault in like literally inside of a mountain in this island. And anyway, they've got all the, it's like, it's the thing is climate controlled. They've got everything at temperatures of like 18 degrees Celsius below zero, and they have seeds of all the originals, every sort of product or every sort of plant ever made there. I wonder why they're storing that, huh? They've got 500,000 samples of crops there, different variety of different seeds, so that and what they say is so that crop diversity can be conserved for the future. Right. Like after all the GMO crops wipe everybody out, then they'll have the real crops to plant, or maybe they'll eat those. The elites will eat those, and the rest of us will be eating GMO tomatoes that, you know, as big as a watermelon. And we're like, oh, this is all natural. This is very good for us. But this is what you have. So on the one hand, you've got the government, which wastes money on all kinds of crazy stuff, and that's not working. Then you've got private corporations, and we just talked about Monsanto. You see how evil they can be. So what about something in the middle? What about a quasi-public option, right? A semi-public option, something like a foundation or an NGO, non-governmental organization. Those are out there to help humanity, right? Well, not exactly. The most famous, well-known foundation is the Rockefeller Foundation, of course. But I think if you gun to somebody's head, they couldn't give you a really accurate description of what they do. But the official description of what the Rockefeller Foundation does comes from their website, and it goes like this. For more than a century, the Rockefeller Foundation has been dedicated to a single mission, promoting the well-being of humanity throughout the world. Today, the foundation pursues that mission with our dual goals of building greater resilience and advancing more inclusive economies. Through our portfolio of initiatives, we strive to catalyze and scale transformative innovations, convene sector-spanning partnerships, and create systemic change to benefit poor and vulnerable people around the world. Now, of course, this description is utter garbage. The only part of this description that is true is the first sentence. The Rockefeller Foundation has been dedicated to a single mission. The mission that they describe is nonsense. They have never promoted the well-being of humanity in anything they do. They promote the well-being of organizations that they own and control, but that's about it. In fact, Charlie Munger, who is number two at Berkshire Hathaway to Warren Buffett, said, quote, "I believe Costco does more for civilization than the Rockefeller Foundation. I think it's a better place." Ooh, burn up yours with 100 pack of hot dogs, Rockefeller. But he's right. You know, that foundation says that they focus on four different areas. They focus on health, ecosystems, livelihoods, and the desire to transform cities. The assumption, though, that we make is that we presume that they intend to improve these four areas. They do not. They are just actively trying to transform them. They never said we're going to try and transform them into something better. They just said they were going to transform them, and that's what they did. Now, we've talked about how they got involved, the Rockefeller Foundation got involved with the schools. And in 1946, which is really just a year after the end of World War II, the Rockefeller Foundation granted the General Education Board $7.5 billion, or in terms of today's money, $91 billion to the General Education Board to help schools. Now, anyone that gives $91 billion away is going to want something in return. When the Rockefeller Foundation says they're going to focus on the health of Americans, what they mean is that they're focusing on ways to destroy people's health of Americans so that they can sell them some, you know, patchwork solution to fix this problem that they just created. So they claim to have a desire to transform cities. Well, what they're planning to transform the cities into is a dystopian nightmare, because they're the ones, the Rockefeller Foundation, that put forward Agenda 21, which was this push to get into the 21st century. Then they changed the name to Agenda 2030. They moved the goalposts out 30 years. And what Agenda 2030 is pushing is to push everybody into megacities, to large megacities, and have everybody living in rooms that are like 10 foot by 9 foot, you know, like little prison cells, essentially, crammed into there. Well, everyone, of course, except them. But this is public. You can take a look at Agenda 2030. In fact, I encourage you to do that. Look through it, through the United Nations and the Rockefeller Foundation, this push for sustainability. It's always sustainability, right? Oh, we have to sustain everything. Well, you guys own the oil companies. Are you putting caps in place to make sure you're not polluting or dumping your byproducts into the rivers? No. But they want everybody else to worry about that stuff, you know, because of sustainability. So. But they're also heavily involved in the creation of the pharmaceutical industry. And the Rockefeller Foundation's role in that is, well, it's massive. The Rockefeller Foundation and the Carnegie Foundation as well, both evil. Here's a quote from somebody named Dr. John Reiser. He's an author, and he wrote this. He said, in the early 1900s, the Rockefeller and Carnegie families paid two men to create a devious scheme that would forever change the construct of medical schools. The Flexner Report, written by Pritchard, concluded that only medical schools that committed to using synthetic-based medicines and avoided plant-based treatments, homeopathic and naturopathic protocols, should be offered large grants that were created by Rockefeller and Carnegie. From that point forward, only medical schools philosophically aligned with petrochemical companies would become successful in graduating medical physicians. Presently, the same petrochemical companies have great influence and control over most components associated with modern medicine. The Rockefeller family and its far-reaching tentacles that can be traced directly to the petrochemical and banking industries have a great deal of influence regarding curricula, as well as other important elements embedded within the modern medical institutions of higher learning. What does that mean? It means that if you want to go through med school, you're going to get a healthy dose of what the Rockefellers want you to learn, because they set up the grant programs to make it so that you had to teach about petrochemical derived medicines as opposed to plant based. So they made it so that homeopathic doctors look like cranks, and Far East doctors that are, you know, curing people with herbs and balms and things like that make them look like a bunch of, you know, witch doctors and things like that. When in actuality, those remedies work just fine. They were doing a pretty good job. Of course, there probably could have been improvements to be made, but the medicine that people take to these days, what they don't realize is that it's not natural. And so what is the base derivative of it? What is it made from? Well, it's made from petrochemicals. It's oil based, which is what the Rockefellers and Carnegies were involved in. Obviously, Carnegie was more steel than the Rockefeller, but still, they were involved in these industries. They had they were looking for new ways to push their products out onto people, and their invention of the pharmaceutical industry is devious. And the third leading cause of death in the United States every year is due to medicine and medical error, things like that. Well, I wonder why. Because our bodies aren't used to that. Now, it's not to say that all medicine that is created by Big Pharma is going to kill you. Some of it's helpful. You know, look, when you need a medical procedure performed on you, you're glad that you have doctors and everything like that. But doctors know what they know because they went through med schools. The med schools exist because they were founded and funded by the Rockefellers and Carnegies in order to push an agenda that helps to sell their product. So doctors don't know this. I mean, they might know it, but they don't realize it. They don't understand how heavily influenced they have been by this. That's why you talk to guys that are fresh out of med school, you talk to them about chiropractors, they say, oh, those guys are fake, man. Those guys are no good. Because the Rockefellers can't sell you anything through a chiropractor, you know? They can't make enough money on somebody, you know, prescribing you a small ointment that's made out of, you know, fruits and berries or, you know, plant-based materials that cost $30. They want to be able to sell you, $6,000 a year worth of medications. And so, they've created this industry and this mentality that if you're not getting a pill, especially in the United States, if you've got a problem, go to the doctor, get a prescription, they'll give you a pill that will cure your problem. Well, I don't want to go too deep into the history of the pharmaceutical industry because it's really dirty. I'll do that in future episodes, But I think it's just fair to say that when you've got the Rockefellers and the Carnegies involved in the creation of this industry, whatever industry they're in, if they were involved in the music industry, you'd have to take a look at that industry a different way, knowing that they created it, funded it, pushed the education platform out to everybody, and then reinforced it over and over again and made it so that it is the worldwide standard for whatever. In this particular case, as we're talking about the medical industry, they've made it so that Big Pharma is the arbiter of what is health and what is not. They have all the cures for what ails you, and anybody else that's trying to sell you something different, they're quacks and charlatans and snake oil salesmen, because they're trying to, you know, get you to take more vitamin C or something like that. And we know that that is nonsense. We know that those are lies. We know that they like to push that because they're trying to dominate the market. So it's important for us to, you know, to just realize that we're allowed to, you know, we're allowed to take a second look at some of these industries and see if they are actually working for us or against us. And that takes us to the final point, which is the NGOs, non-governmental organizations. And what it is, it's so a non-governmental organization is any nonprofit voluntary citizens group, which is organized on a local, national, or international level. Task-oriented and driven by people with common interests, NGOs perform a variety of services and humanitarian functions, bring citizen concerns to governments, advocate and monitor policies, and encourage political participation through provision of information, blah, blah, blah. What that means is that these are organizations that are not governments, but not governmental backed, but they've got a lot of government in them. And, you know, this can be a devious component, but it's relatively new. In 1900, there were only 21 NGOs that existed. In 1990, there were 50,000. Okay. These are tax shelters dressed up to look like charities. They have two purposes. One is to shield from taxes. The other is to disguise the true intentions of the organizations. Not every NGO is up to no good, but a disproportionate number of them have ties to shady characters and questionable operations. Do you ever hear of that? The Giving Pledge, that NGO where all these billionaires say, oh, we're going to give away all our charity. And you're like, oh, that all our money is going to go to charity when we die. And we're putting it in this. And isn't this great? Look at what we've pledged. Mark Zuckerberg has pledged to give all his money away. Oh, Bill Gates has pledged to give away all his money. Stop it. Just stop it. These are tax shelters. That's what they are. They're designed to look like charities, but they're tax shelters. If you know what Bill Gates is up to, if you know who he really is, that dude's not giving his money away. Okay. Just, you've got to get a grip if you think that. And because the best tool for destabilizing a foreign country is an NGO. The reason is that you get all the political cover that a non-government organization implies, you know, through its name, plus you get the goodwill of looking like a charity. And nobody wants to accuse a charity of being shady and being up to no good because you look like a total asshole, especially if you're wrong with your accusations. But like any self-respecting sociopath will tell you, the best way to fool people is to take a gigantic lie and wrap it in a fair amount of truth. So on the surface, a dirty NGO looks like an organization devoted to the benefit of mankind, right? But the true nature, like what they're really doing, is only discovered by people that are, you know, bold enough to accuse these righteous people of being scumbags and then digging into the organization to peel away enough layers of these lies to get to the true mission of what these organizations are up to. And it is a favorite method of these New World Order maniacs, because they have discovered that NGOs can infiltrate foreign countries, they can manipulate opinions, they can even change laws that benefit their goals without even firing a shot. So governments like NGOs, they use them as spy agencies. And, you know, so what does a dirty NGO look like? Well, I mean, for starters, it would have Henry Kissinger involved. And he is tied. He has 112 different NGOs that he is a part of, Henry Kissinger. And if he's not involved, then there might be James Woolsey, who is the former CIA director. He's in 86 different NGOs. Everybody knows about George Soros. He has Open Foundation. That's an NGO. They've been very instrumental in manufacturing civil unrest, not just here at home in the United States, in the black community. Black Lives Matters, 100% funded by Soros, that Charlottesville protest and things like that. He puts a lot of money into that. But the Open Society has also been involved in all those color revolutions around the world, in Ukraine and you name it. If Open Foundation, Open Society Foundation is involved with something, meaning Soros, what they're doing is destabilizing governments. That is what they do. So here's a list of some of the people that have ties to multiple NGOs. These names will ring a bell. George Shultz, 76. David Rockefeller, 73 different NGOs. Zbigniew Brzezinski, when he was alive, 62. George H.W. Bush, when he was alive, 54. Legendary scumbag Madeleine Albright, 54. The Rothschild family has 54 of them. George Soros has 49. Bill and Hillary Clinton are a part of 35 NGOs. Colin Powell, 35. Paul Wolfowitz, 35. Donald Rumsfeld, just mentioned him, 34. John McCain, 33. Condoleezza Rice, 32. Dick Cheney, 30. Are you starting to get the hint? A lot of these scumbags use NGOs as covers for them to do the things that they want to do. They're not all giving away turkeys on Thanksgiving. You know what I mean? You know, don't forget there's major tax benefits to these organizations. This is why you hear about, like I said, the Giving Pledge. And these NGOs, they're tax shields. They're remarkably efficient at doing that, in part because that's what they're set up for. Here's a quote from the New Atlas. It says, funded not by the communities they claim to serve, but by these foreign interests, they often operate under the pretext of upholding the legitimate roles and responsibilities of genuine NGOs, while in reality, undermining a targeted nation's government, its people, its institutions, and national peace and stability. Ironically, such organizations also undermine the perceived legitimacy and effectiveness of real NGOs. Foreign interests seek to do this for a number of reasons, including pressuring a targeted government to make concessions regarding bilateral relations, competing with and eventually overrunning state institutions, and even replacing a nation's entire government. So whether you're a corporation, an NGO, or just a run-of-the-mill government, it's all about intention. What are you doing? Not what do you say you're doing. What are you actually doing? Are you spending $16.5 million to study the sex life of pigeons? Are you running an NGO that is trying to remove the duly elected president from power, like George Soros has done so many times? Are you an NGO that is operating under humanitarian aid, going to vaccinate all of these poor people in India, like Bill Gates did through Gavi, his organization, one of the organizations his Gates Foundation is tied to, giving polio shots to Indian children, and then watching as 47,500 of those same Indian children develop polio-like symptoms. What a surprise. Look, it's not to say that all NGOs or all corporations or all governments are bad. It has to do with the people that are running them. And it has to do with not just their stated goal, but their actual goal, what they're really doing. And unfortunately, there's a lot of fraud out there. And there's a lot of bad people that are destroying humanity, looting this place, poisoning us with their cancer-causing chemicals. And we just seem to let it happen. And until we collectively stand up as a society and say, enough of this nonsense, enough of you guys, we're going to keep getting what we get. And on some levels, we might be getting what we deserve. Because if we don't have the balls to stand up to them, then they're just going to keep running their play. If you like this podcast, please share it. Send it out to everybody that you can in your social media. Subscribe on your podcast platforms. Check out the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Message me if you have questions. Take care, everybody.